Welcome to the Women's Motorsports Network podcast, the show that puts the spotlight on the incredible women who fuel the world of motorsports. From drivers to crew members, engineers to fans, and everyone in between, we're here to celebrate the trailblazers, dreamers, and doers shaping the sport we love. Each episode, we share inspiring stories of females of all ages from every corner of the motorsports universe, past, present, and future. It's a journey through the seasons of life filled with heartfelt moments, laughter, and a whole lot of horsepower. So whether you're a lifelong fan, a racer yourself, or simply curious about the extraordinary women behind the wheel, settle in, relax, and enjoy a fun and uplifting ride with us. This is the Women's Motorsports Network podcast, connecting and celebrating women in motorsports, one story at a time. Let's hit the track. Hello, everyone. This is Melinda Russell with the Women's Motorsports Network podcast. And my guest today is a familiar face if you're involved in motorsports. And I'm tickled to have her with me today. Connie Nyholm is here from VIR. Connie's been involved in motorsports for such a long time. She's got so much knowledge and experience, and I can't wait for her to share that with us. So, Connie, welcome to the show. And would you please first, though, tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, your pets, anything that you want to share.
Sure. Thank you, Melinda. Thank you for having me. I was, you know, just commenting that you're just prolific in the work you do. And it's just terrific to always have all those neat perspectives from such a wide audience. So my little audience is not quite as large as yours. I grew up in a small town in Virginia, Martinsville, Virginia, where the Speedway is. Never went to a NASCAR race. My dad would go, and he'd go after the start and leave before the finish just to enjoy the box seating with his friends and not have to deal with the traffic. So my first experience to go there was actually after I started VIR, I went there for economic development event. Growing up there was a really neat experience because Martinsville was a small town of 17,000 people in Henry County, Virginia, which is very, very rural, lots of tobacco farms and cattle farming. And I actually worked on a tobacco farm in high school with my chemistry teacher and her husband and some other students. So kind of varied experience there. And when I left Martinsville, I went to William & Mary and got a degree in economics with a minor in philosophy. So I really enjoyed that. And while I was at college, my dad called and said that we had had layoffs of 4,500 people in a total population town of 17,000 with Toltecs and DuPont. So overnight, we went from having the highest millionaires per capita and a very strong middle class to devastation. Wow. And, you know, just had to kind of get through that. But fortunate for me, I was on my way to work, you know, so I first started with Procter & Gamble in Cincinnati and then went to HBO in Manhattan, both in their finance departments, when I got married to a Swedish guy that I picked up in a bar in Amsterdam, Holland. So we dated long distance for about a year and a half and then got married and moved to New York. And that's when I started working for HBO. But all those small town experiences really have impacted me greatly, especially that layoff that happened even after I was gone, because that just really solidified my love of small business and entrepreneurship and economic development and just trying to raise the tide to float all boats. So here at VIR, I've been so fortunate to be able to foster small business. We have 14 businesses on our campus. We have a growing industrial park. I never thought we'd run out of land with 1,250 acres, but we don't have that many lots left. And so I'm very particular about who I let into the family now, because I want to make sure that they can benefit from the tenants around them and the racetrack operations, and also bring more to all of us to make the pie bigger. So anyone that wants a bigger piece instead of growing the whole pie is probably not going to get to be here. So that's just my short version motto on a small business development. So
that's amazing. And, you know, I grew up in a small town. You said small town, 17,000, that'd be a big town. I grew up in a little farming community of 2,200 people in right along the Mississippi River in Illinois. And there's nothing like the experience of small town, the school, everybody knows everybody, which can sometimes not be a good thing. But the other side of it is it's a different atmosphere when you grow up in that kind of an area. So
it is. And when I moved to New York, I lived in Putnam Valley, which is it was just over 7,000 and large geographic area right off the Taconic State Parkway. And so I was 50 miles due north of Times Square, but it took me an hour and 35 minutes to commute every day back and forth to HBO. And then I went into commercial real estate on my own and primarily did freestanding retail site selection. And Monroe Muffler Brake was my primary client. And so I located 60 stores for them in four states and a bunch of Rite Aids and McDonald's, Pep Boys, whatnot. I really liked the automotive segment because I was always a car girl. We went to a lot of car shows, a lot of swap meets. Sweden has a very, very strong culture that they call Rägerbil, and that is buying old American cars, the bigger the better, and restoring them. So we had a 1976 Eldorado convertible that we drove down to Daytona Beach with some guys from my ex-husband's motorcycle club in Sweden. And we were on the beach with the Cadillac, and we saw this Lincoln Continental, and it said Osnekuker on the side, which in Swedish is donkey genitalia. So we knew that they were Swedes in that car. Uh-huh. And so we hooked up and had a really fun get together, you know, with our Rägerbil on Daytona Beach.
That's fun. You've got a lot of good memories for sure. So your dad was a car guy. Is that how you got interested in cars and motorsports?
No, he wasn't really. He liked cars, but only from a practical standpoint, because we grew up extremely modest. And after, gosh, I guess I was around fourth grade when we had to move into the city limits to keep my sister in school. We were tuitioning from the county schools to the city schools. And a few years later, he became self-employed and was doing retail real estate site selection and home building. And I guess he got a little further ahead than he had been before, because he bought a 220 diesel Mercedes, and he thought he had just hit pay dirt. And we stood in the driveway slamming the doors, hearing it go thunk, thunk, instead of rattle, rattle. And that was the extent of his carness. You know, I guess he went test driving with me one day on Toyota Celica because he had bought me a Pacer. And it turned out it had no emissions. It wouldn't pass inspection. You know, he had bought this lemon and I hated it. He traded it for an even bigger Pacer, which was even worse. And I came home from college one day and my mom she said, "You just don't like that car, do you?" And I said, "No, but I feel so fortunate to have a car and, you know, thank you." And she says, "Dad's going to take you to a dealership." So we went test drove a Supra out in the country and we were going through the backcountry roads. And, you know, I hit one of the turns and got some air, you know, and brought it down. And he's like, "Oh my God, that car fits your butt. We're going to buy it." You know? And so he just thought that was the coolest thing. So I think he was always asking me if I'd had any recent speeding tickets and what was I driving. And so he enjoyed that through me, but that's about the extent of it.
Yeah. So how did you get from New York, HBO, all those things, commercial real estate, to VIR?
Well, I was introduced to my founding partner, Harvey Siegel, by his right hand, Peggy Burke. And so Peggy was managing the leasing of all of Harvey's shopping centers. That was his main enterprise, I guess. And he was a car guy, big time car guy, and he raced vintage cars. So Peggy and I met each other through a group called WIRE, WIRRE, which is Women in Retail Real Estate. Okay. So it was kind of our forerunner to WMNA. It wasn't as big, but a woman who was the head leasing agent for a major mall developer, so she had a really big job. She was a rock star. She decided to start this networking group because when we would go to International Council of Shopping Center meetings, there were so few women in there that, you know, we were the independents primarily or the rare one working for a corporate job. And so we didn't have the big fancy booths and the cocktail parties and all the things. So we just didn't have very effective networking. So Mary Ann started this group, and she recruited seven women from different walks of retail real estate. So I was asked to serve the freestanding retail site selector. We had a publisher. Peggy represented the mid-sized shopping center developer, Harvey. And, you know, so we wrote our bylaws and started having monthly meetings and phone calls. And it got so big that the men started petitioning us to come. Oh. And so once a year, we rented Sardi's on Times Square and invited everybody. And we charged an admission to it, which we used to fund our meeting activities for the next year. So it worked out really well. And we all really did much more business because of this group and the close-knit nature of it. So it was just terrific. And during that time, Harvey put VIR under contract. So he was vintage racing, and a bunch of his buddies said, "We're old guys racing old cars. We would like to race on old tracks. You're an accomplished real estate developer. You're in your 60s. Here's your challenge, like Top Gear. Go off and find a ghost track and bring it back to life." And Harvey's like, "I like that idea." Oh. And so he started looking at Bridgehampton and Vineland, New Jersey, and Cumberland, Maryland, Marlboro. And then he found VIR. And then he was introduced to me by Peggy. And I said, "Peggy, I mean, you talk about him like he's a crazy person." She goes, "Oh, I know. I'm just bitching. He's fine. You'll like him. Just come interview," which I did. And we hit it off like two peas in a pod, just realized we had really complementary strengths and weaknesses and ADD off the charts, and we could each manage that with one another. So I started farming out some of my business and worked for him for 2 or 3 days a week. And after about 2 or 3 weeks, I just gave all of my stuff to other brokers and just have been working with Harvey full time.
Wow.
So 22 months later, we had all of our permits and two meetings, built a construction team. My dad was still alive. He had a lot of contacts because he just had integrity, you know, that would light up the sky. And so when people found out that I was his daughter, mm-hmm. that gave us instant credibility, you know, in this rural Southern Virginia area, and we were able to pull everything off and open our doors in 22 months.
Wow. And what year was that, Connie?
We opened March 17th, 2000. So wow. We're about to have our 25th anniversary.
Year.
Yeah. And Harvey was my age when we started. He's now 90.
Wow.
And he will be coming back for our celebration with staff and all of our club members and some of the people who helped us get off the ground.
And does he live close by?
He's lived in New York City all his life.
So he just, and that's not real far for him to go, but does he come to the track a lot?
The last time he was here was in 2018 when we had the runoffs.
Okay. So just for special events.
Yeah. He sold his interest back in 2012.
Okay.
And to the Stouts, who own and operate Pit Race, and they sold their interest in 2020 to my new partner, Mark Rain. Okay. And he's a VIR club member and a founding member of Epic Games. So
okay.
Mark is awesome.
Okay, awesome. So what's the plan? Do you have a big celebration, something planned for this year? Or is it just the whole year you're going to celebrate?
I think we're going to have a dedicated celebration on the actual anniversary day of March 17th with staff and our club members and our guests from before and some of our past staff, you know, just the gang's all here. But we really want to celebrate not only the opening, but our 25 years of growth in advancement in facilities and in operations and race schedule, just every aspect of VIR. So we're going to be producing large posters and video of milestones, old photographs, all that kind of stuff to play in the background. And we'll make that available throughout the year to our rental groups as they're in. And we'll have another acknowledgement during our IMSA race in August with our program and all that. So,
yeah. Wow. So exciting. And you can look back and just see the progression and the changes and not just in what you guys do, but in the world in general, technology, everything. And you just have to be so proud of what you've done.
Yeah. I have the best job on the planet. So as I say all the time, I've got 360 people making me look good.
Yeah. Well, it takes everybody, doesn't it? You can't do it by yourself.
No way.
Yeah.
I don't want to and couldn't if I did.
Right. Exactly. So for people who maybe aren't familiar with VIR, because, you know, I'm in the Midwest. So I have people that listen from all over the world, actually. Tell me a little bit about what kind of track it is and what kind of races run and what kind of events and things you have at VIR.
Sure. I mean, we're one of the kind of 12 big tracks, as we say, or maybe 16 that 12 host IMSA and others host IndyCar, SRO, Moto America. Mm-hmm. So those are usually the pro events that we communicate and work together. We have a group called the Road Racing Industry Council of those tracks that have a publicly promoted sanctioned event that we're, you know, at risk for the promotion and outcome of those events. And we get together in Daytona every year and have Zoom meetings otherwise to share best practices and to elevate everybody in the sport from a road racing perspective. And that would include the Roval in Charlotte and also street races. So if it's a road course race, permanent or temporary, we're going to be at the table. And VIR is just massive. So Road America near your neighborhood, they're, mm-hmm. I believe, 4.1 miles. Our historic track is 3.27. But Harvey had a brilliant idea when we resurrected the original track that was only 26 feet wide to 30, 33, and 36. And we've since widened beyond that in more areas. We bifurcated the track so that we can run the South Course, which is 1.65 miles, much like Lime Rock in Connecticut, mm-hmm. or the North Course, which is 2.25, much like Mid-Ohio. We can run those simultaneously. Or we run the full course, Watkins Glen, or we run the Grand Course, which is a mixture of all the different track configurations, the Grand Course, and that's 4.1. So we have a lot of asset that we can run, and we always have two tracks running simultaneously. So we're active over 300 calendar days a year, but we rent a track about 480 times a year.
Wow.
So it's a very, very extensive operation. Each of the racetracks have their own timing tower, their own paddock space. We've got over 20 miles of off-road trails, obstacle courses, multiple shooting ranges. We have two sniper ranges, which I think I'm the only civilian who can say that.
Yeah. So
1,000 meter range at 100 meter berms and about a 1,400 yard unknown distance range. And then we have karting, an 1840s tavern, two hotels, residential villas for individual sale, and lots of more plans in the works.
Yeah.
So it's really a motorsport resort.
It is. I was just going to say that.
Of course. So, and we have, you know, we hosted an extremely large concert in 22 and 23, a 4-day festival. Learned a lot. Not everything went great, but we learned a lot. And so we're now revisiting that experience and how we might downscale that and then re-upscale it over years to add that other valuable mm-hmm. entertainment, you know, component to this humongous property. We have so much asset that we can put to use.
Yeah. And so he was really smart, wasn't he, when he planned that track?
Oh yeah, he was. And he has the aesthetic eye. I mean, VIR is beautiful.
I need to get there.
Yeah, please do. Let me know. We'll do a golf cart tour with wine.
Okay.
but Harvey wanted to have our buildings look like Eric Sloan Barnes from Northeastern Pennsylvania. Well, I had located numerous Monroe Muffler bike stores in that area and Rite Aid, so I knew exactly what he was talking about. And he sketched it out, and I made him sign and initial it for our history box. And that's what we look like. I mean, we look like the beautiful countryside, but we have fiber optic everywhere. We just got a $10 million water grant to run water from Danville City. We already send our sewer to Danville and get our fiber from a major hub there. So now our utilities will be completely in line and safe forever because we won't have, you know, wells and septic anywhere anymore.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I could just listen to you talk about it forever. I've heard so many things about how beautiful it is. And I think that's one of the first things that people say about it. They, you know, they don't necessarily say, oh, the racing's really good there, or this restaurant's really good there. It's always about how beautiful it is.
Yeah. But the racing is really good here.
Oh, I know. I know it is. But the beauty, and I think it's stunning to people because it's so unusual. You don't see that anywhere else.
Right. And, you know, the best thing that I think we did in resurrecting the track was we didn't change it. So we did widen it, but we widened it from the center line so it kept the racing line. So when we repaved the second time, we did add more pavement into the straights just to provide more passing zones, but we did not add pavement to like our tight S's down in turns 3, 4, and 5, because then it would have ruined the rhythm as the racers could straighten out the line. So now we have all the curbing that's necessary, all the fencing, the guardrail. When we came here, there was nothing.
Yeah.
So you can see on our website, which is really kind of fun, two things on our video channel is there's a video called Then and Now, and Mitchell Smith and our marketing department took footage from 1998 and put it side by side with footage from 2000 as to what the track, I mean, to 2020, what the track looked like then versus what we started with. Yeah. And it's really neat to see how there's just no safety barriers at all. I mean, as Harvey says, back when sex was safe and racing was dangerous. So, and Kerrigan, our president, says, oh, built before lawyers.
But
that's a neat one. And then our documentary of reopening, resurrecting the track, and that kind of grew into a VIR's place in American road racing history is called VIR Reborn. And it's a little over 2 hours. It's a proper professionally filmed documentary, and it's free on our YouTube channel.
Okay. Well, I'm going to push that for people to watch that, because I think that if you haven't been there, which like I said, I haven't, but I do have it on my bucket list.
Yeah.
Then I think once you kind of see it, it's a little bit like when you stream a race from a track that's too far to go, but you want to watch the race. It makes you want to go to that track after streaming it. And it's like, I really need to go to that track. And so that's kind of how these do. They, you know, after you watch those and you're like, oh, I need to go there for sure.
And that's, you know, I experienced that at every big event because I try to touch every spectator area twice a day, every day. Wow. And so I walk everywhere. And so I'll just talk with people. And it's like, well, how did you get to VIR? Is this your first time? And some will say, oh yeah, it's a bucket list track. I'm so glad to finally be here. And I'm like, well, cool. Where have you been? And they rattle off where they've been. And I say, well, what's next? They said, back here. And that to me is the greatest compliment.
Oh, absolutely. I've never had. So. Absolutely. So Connie, when you started being involved and became a track owner, you had to be in the minority as a woman doing that, I would think.
Yeah. I was the only one that didn't either inherit it, you know, because I think Indianapolis Motor Speedway had a matriarch at some point.
Okay.
I loved Michelle Truman. She was an early mentor for me. She ran Mid-Ohio after her father and then sold it. And I think, you know, Harvey and I, we were a startup.
Right.
Because it was a historic track. But for us, it was a startup that we had to uncover its history, document its history, revere its history. And we feel that we are simply continuing the legacy of the original history. So that's part of our core values for all of our team. And it's real important to me. So
how did you have any issues? Did, like, if you went to meetings or anything, and did they think you were the secretary tagging along, or, you know, did they welcome you, accept you, the men that owned the tracks, and you know, meetings and things?
Yeah, they did. And a lot of that, I guess I owe to Harvey as a partner and mentor as well, because Harvey had a majority female staff. And he said, well, they work harder and they communicate better.
Smart man.
And he just, it was so second nature to him. And we had such opposite and complementary strengths and weaknesses. I mean, I wouldn't more pick a light fixture than I could fly. And Harvey loved the aesthetic part. So he did that. Yeah. I got all the financing, the zoning and permitting, and built the team to do the construction. And, you know, he knew all that too, but we would work together and then divide and conquer. Uh-huh. So as I used to say, I was kind of glued at Harvey's hip till I was fully inoculated into his vision for VIR, because I was a, you know, sweat equity player. He had promised me 1% a year for 10 years to keep me, you know, interested, so to speak. And that was part of our negotiation of me coming on board. And that was in May of 98. And he gave me the 10% for Christmas.
Wow.
And then a few years later, he gave me another 15%. So then I was a 25% owner. And then when my parents passed away, I bought 25%. So we were 50-50 partners. So, you know, we were always kind of Mutt and Jeff. And it got where he'd look at me and I'd say, I already did that.
Yeah.
And people would go nuts. You know, they said, all right, so Harvey, whisper to me what you were going to say. And then Connie, you tell me what that is. And we always had it right. Uh-huh. Because we were just so aligned. And so we went into meetings. That was our behavior. And so people reacted more to that. They thought we were an old married couple. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Lord, no. And Harvey's like, don't tell Sharon. You know, his wife will be here with him for the anniversary. So Sharon's been a great supporter. But no, I never had an issue with that. And yeah. I serve on a lot of boards now, especially if they have to do with economic development, because that's my passion. Mm-hmm. Aside from VIR. And when I would meet people and they would try to treat me a little differently or make sure that I knew I was not in the in crowd or whatever, normally someone would ask me my opinion on something and I would tell them, well, I'm happy to tell you what I feel. I probably am not truly conversant totally on your topic, but I need to warn you, I don't do warm and fuzzy well. And then I was very direct in my communication and always have been and always will be. But I learned very quickly that diffused the situation, because mm-hmm. I was usually the only woman in the room, but I was also a very straight talker. And so yeah. By addressing my candor, I guess the woman part just kind of went along. It's never stopped me from anything.
No.
And I've never really felt uncomfortable. Now, if they talked about me behind my back, I don't know.
Well, let them.
Yeah, I don't care.
You know, that's my favorite thing to say nowadays is let them. I read, her name just escaped me, Mel Robbins' book. Hmm. And if you haven't read it, it's called The Let Them Theory. Or you can listen on Audible. Hmm. Amazing, amazing book. And and she says, you know, let them if they want to do that. And so that's my new catchphrase.
Yeah. I mean, I think that applies to everybody across the board. I mean, it doesn't matter if they're male, female, young, old, rich, poor, whatever. People are going to have their viewpoints. And right. It's hard to put yourself in someone else's shoes until you have a very, very similar experience.
Exactly.
So just like I do with my industrial park, where I want to grow the pie instead of have a bigger piece. I like having a lot of people at the table because I like to hear their perspectives. Mm-hmm. And whether I agree or not, it's still going to make me a richer thinker.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's always things that we haven't thought of that we don't know that, you know, somebody can bring to light. And whether we like it or not, it's still a different viewpoint that we can accept.
I mean, that's why we have to surround ourselves with people who are better than we are.
Right.
You know, a lot of the younger people, you know, ask me all the time, like, you know, your staff talks about you with such reverence. You know, what is it, you know, what's your special sauce? I said, well, if I give someone the responsibility for something, I'm going to give them the authority to do it. So they may need to work within our policies and procedures or consult their manager. But, you know, if they know, they know. And one of our other core values is do what's right. And one team all in. And if they can do those two things, they're going to get it right most of the time. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, I'm like, well, please share. So we all learn from your mistake and we'll be sharing our mistakes and you'll learn from ours too.
Yeah. So what's been the most difficult thing about being a track owner?
Oh, gosh.
Is there anything that comes to mind? Okay. Maybe.
I guess the biggest problem for me as a overachiever is not being able to do as much as I want as quickly as I want for our team, for our community, and for facility development. I mean, I have so much more I want to do, and I'm 65 and I've got tremendous energy, so I'm not really worried about that. But you never know when you might get hit by a truck, you know, so I try to make sure that my people know everything I know. And we're master planning and moving forward as quickly and responsibly as we can. But so often I wish that was yesterday, not tomorrow.
Yeah. And if you have to deal with any kind of government or permits or anything, then your hands are really tied.
Yeah.
And that's hard for sure.
EEQ.
I think, you know, they always talk about the younger generation, how they want it now. Well, so do I. I'm the same way. If I have an idea and I want to do something, I want to do it now. I don't want to wait 6 months or a year, you know. So I think that's just kind of the mentality maybe that we all have in some ways. But, you know, if you want to do it, you don't want somebody holding you up about it.
No, that's you
for
don't.
Sure. That's for sure.
No.
So, Connie, what's your favorite thing about what you've done these last 25 years?
Oh, my gosh. I guess the Dinner with Racers guys were here a few years ago and during the IMSA event, and they were interviewing drivers, crew, officials, lots of fans in every area from all walks of life. And they said, what brings you to VIR? And overwhelmingly, the answer was, when I'm at VIR, I feel like I'm home.
I knew you were going to say that.
And I think that's just amazing. You know, it really is. And people, like, when I'm walking around, I say, come back, come off and bring your friends. And then the next year, like, some kid will come and shove his friend at me and say, here's my friend. I met you last year, you know? And so those little things you would think just don't really matter that much, but they do.
Oh, and they just warm your heart, don't they?
They sure do. And so every time I talk about my team, I start to cry. So I'm really bad at that.
Yeah. Well, but that just shows your commitment and your passion for not only VIR, but for the people that have helped you get where you are. And I love that you have that, you know.
And that's everybody. I mean, the drivers, the officials, you know, the OEMs, because, you know, people are very free. I don't want to say with advice, because that can be positive or negative, just an opinion. But everybody has an opinion. But there are also people that have some good, well thought out, well founded advice. And it may be in correcting something that they see could be better, or it may be a new idea. But I am a sponge for that. Mm-hmm. And I get such good, you know, mentorship from people who will take that time to sit down and have the one on one that can truly make me and us better.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are the ones that you really appreciate.
Yeah. I have two at Michelin that are worth the world to me.
Yeah. Yeah. What a wonderful experience you've had, Connie. I'm jealous in that I could be involved in racing every day, all day long. And that's kind of why I do this, because I love telling the stories. And it's so fun to hear, like, how you got to where you are, because And it isn't just you. It's so many women, you know. Well, yesterday I did an interview, and the girl took gymnastics as a little girl. Mm-hmm. And her gymnastics teacher also had a friend that raced, and he got them into kart racing. I'm like, who would have thought a gymnastics teacher started a go-kart team? I mean, it's just so fun to hear the stories.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just all you have to do is keep your ears open and open mind. Something that I'm noticing recently, very recently, you know, in the last couple of WIMNA years, basically, are these young women who are coming out of college or going into college or in vocational school, which, you know, I'm a big fan of, coming out and being willing to volunteer.
Yes.
So if they volunteer, like, they want to come here and volunteer in whatever we can put them in. I said, you know, if it's in the not a spectator event, then we can have you shadow, be on a flag stand, you know, shadow flagging and communications, you know, have these different experiences. Mm-hmm. And when I asked them, like, what makes you want to do this? And they're doing it all across the country. They said, we want to see all the tracks. We want to learn more about how they operate. We want to have a myriad of experiences so that we're more well-rounded, but that we can make a better career choice in who we want to be uh-huh. as we go into the next phase of our life. And I'm like, how old are you?
I know. It's amazing.
You sound like me when I was your age.
Exactly. And when I talk to a lot of these girls, what I've really noticed a lot is when I interview, let's say anywhere from 12 to 17 year olds, they're very mature for their age. And oftentimes I think it's, you know, and I ask them, you know, about it. And it's because they've had to deal with adversity. Things don't go right. They've had to deal with disappointments and things, and they've grown yeah. and matured because of that. And they tend to be more mature for their age if they're involved in racing.
That's life. It's not about getting a participation trophy. It's about finding your path through the adversity, you know, and taking the good lessons from it and not, you know, becoming a drug abuser or something.
Right. So, well, and put
I'm very encouraged. We've hired a lot of staff in the last few years, and a lot of them are much younger, and they're just making us better, and they're great employees. And that's something recently encouraging to me about our future.
And there were so many young, well, I'm 69, so I mean, I'm older than you, but there were so many young people at WMNA, and some with their parents, and you know, that were really young, or like you said, the college age or the newly graduated college. Mm-hmm. And they're so involved and they're so passionate about what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I had a gal say to me, I looked at all the areas that I could have gone into, and I woke up one morning and I decided I have to pick something that's going to be fulfilling and yet that I want to get up and go and do every day. Mm-hmm. And so she's an account rep at one of the NASCAR Cup teams, and she's loving it.
Mm-hmm. That's great. You know, I remember clearly, you know, because people say, how did you get into this? And I've told you my story with Harvey. But when I was 12, we were having breakfast on our screened-in porch with my uncle from Texas, who was larger than life. And he was eating an onion like an apple for breakfast.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm like, oh, my God. And so I'm out there with Daddy and Uncle Roy. And, you know, he says, so what do you want to be when you grow up? I said, I want to be an orthodontist or a real estate developer. And he said, why? And I said, well, both of them can work independently anywhere in the world. Both of them will be rewarded in money and in time off and in professional just vitality if they work hard. And I would like to pursue either one of those. I said, I have braces and I really like my orthodontist and I really like going to his office and meeting the other patients and how improving their appearances, you know, making them feel so much more self-confident, blah, blah, blah. And I was sitting here with Daddy the other day, and he was telling me a story about positive leverage with some lending he had done. And I kept asking him questions and learning like a sponge. And I said, and every time we talk like that, it's just so fascinating. So,
and you were 12 years old.
Yeah. I started out in pre-med, took my first econ class and switched majors. And here I am, real estate developer.
Yeah. Was meant to be for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, Connie, I could listen to you for hours, but I know we both have other things we have to do. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you really want to make sure you share on this podcast?
No, I think you're a great interviewer. I've really enjoyed our time together. I just welcome if anybody ever wants to reach out, please do. If you haven't been to VIR, please come. Come often, come back and bring your friends.
Right.
So I love to show off my baby, and everybody says, gosh, you know, I haven't been here for 6 months and already there's something new. Yeah. And that's our goal, is to always be improving and adding. And, you know, we put service first, and I hope you have a good time.
So the website is?
VIRNOW.com.
Okay.
And on there, you'll see our schedule. our IMSA race is the last weekend in August, the weekend of the 26th, and SRO is before that. Our Moto America event, I think, is going to be spectacular this year, a two-wheeled event, and of course, Hyperfest, our youth event. So we're rented every day. You're welcome most days, and so just come out when you're in the area.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I'm definitely going to try to get there as soon as I can. I was hoping for this summer, so we'll see what happens. But we'll get that on the calendar. And Connie, thank you so much for taking time. I know you're a very busy gal, but I really appreciate that you took the time to a guest on my show.
Thank you. I hope your fans enjoy it.
Oh, I know they will.
Okay. Thank you, Melinda.
You're welcome.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That's it for this episode of the Women's Motorsports Network podcast. We hope you've been inspired by the stories I shared today and feel more connected to the amazing community of women in motorsports. Remember, whether you're behind the wheel, in the pits, or cheering from the stands, your story matters. And together, we're driving change and celebrating every milestone. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, leave us a review, and share it with someone who loves motorsports as much as you do. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and more incredible stories. So until next time, stay inspired, stay connected, and keep racing through life. This is the Women's Motorsports Network podcast, where every woman's story is worth celebrating.